Hello, welcome back. This is Flora Funga Podcast with your host, KK. I took a little bit of a break off, so thank you for being patient. I was traveling to Europe and trying to, I guess, get back on my routine of editing and all of that stuff. So if anybody wants to help me out and edit for experience and intern purposes, that would be amazing. Editing is fun, but I wish I had more time for outreach and other things. So if somebody could take that over, that would be splendid. So this week's episode, we are on 40, how to recycle compost, I guess that's recycle/compost, with Danny from Proven Winners Partner. This is Danny, the president of Self Eco. This was created by a third generation manufacturer. He realized that all petroleum pots ever created are still living today, and he wanted to change that. Proven Winners has partnered up with Self Eco for their compostable pots to change the green industry. Yeah, so I was in Sargent's. I was working and saw that Proven Winners has a new compostable pot that you can plant in the ground. So I, of course, scanned the QR code and looked who actually created this. And so I am talking with Danny today. And so some of the stuff we also chat about is the origin of compostables, the certain colors that can be compostable, why flower pots as a focal point for his company, and why do people use these pots, how to use them, some trials with Proven Winners, how are these pots made, how are they broken down in the ground, what can we compost, what can we recycle, what are all those numbers on the pots even mean? I know you know, you remember learning about in school once, but you never actually remember the numbers. A fun composting fact, how people can reach out to their recycling plants. What does a typical day look like for Danny? What is he most excited for? And what research would he want to look into? And so we also have some resources mentioned. He goes through, there's a Self Eco Garden, Self Eco website, Vistatech, which is his company, Proven Winners, which is his partner. They have a blog, and then I actually attached a Recycle by Numbers page. Also, please support the show. You can join my Patreon as only $1 a month. That's like 0.03 cents a day. So if you have anything to spare, I would much appreciate it if you want to enjoy the show. I like making this podcast, so I would like help in return. All right, let's get in it. Well, thank you, Danny, for being on Flora Funga Podcast today. I really found out about your company. So you're paired with Proven Winners, but you also have like a subcategory or company that creates like an eco, like flower containers. So I guess I kind of found you when I was working at Sargent's and I saw that you had compostable containers and I was like, what? How does this even work? I want to get to the bottom of it. Super nerdy. I need to have this person on the podcast. So
I love it.
Yeah. Kind of give the listeners who you are. How'd you get into like Flora or how'd you get into this passion?
That sounds great. Yeah. Thank you. So I was kind of born into manufacturing. Both my grandparents and my parents were in manufacturing. So I was kind of destined to be in U.S. manufacturing without knowing it. Okay. Every conversation at breakfast, lunch, and dinner was about making things. And so I had no idea I was being brainwashed at just an early age. But so I've been manufacturing for basically my entire life.
Okay.
And when we got into it here with injection molding, we do medical devices, we do telecommunications, you know, we do a variety of products here, typically using petroleum-based products.
Okay.
But as I got involved with the industry, I found out there was more bio-based materials coming up the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started investigating that and investing our own money into sampling it, testing it, trialing it from there. And just kind of one thing led to another. And it started with almost 10 years of just being interested in an alternative to drilling for oil.
Okay.
And, you know, because petroleum products last for, you know, 1,000, 1,200 years. About petroleum, the first petroleum products were invented in the late 1800s. So imagine the very first petroleum products that were invented are still here on the planet today.
Oof. All right.
So everything ever made is still here.
Yeah.
And so in the back of my mind, I said, well, do we need to invent things that last forever?
Right.
And, you know, is that the purposes of the things as our landfills, as the capacity of our landfills, you know, decrease and the areas in space where we have to can have our rubbish removed, start thinking of what could we invest in or invent to use single use plastics, like a one-time use that doesn't hurt the planet as much as petroleum. So we came up with two product lines. We have a caterware line under Self Eco and a garden line under Self Eco, which is all made by the parent company that I own with another family called Vistatech. And so it was neat to have a product line for food service in the caterware line. So we did like champagne flutes, martini glasses, stadium cups. So high-end stuff, you know, or something where sometimes people think when you have to save the plant, you have to sacrifice and you have to, you use a lesser of a product. And we want to prove that you don't have to. You know, when you go to a wedding or if you sit in a suite level at a venue, they give you a really chintzy water cup for a nice cocktail or a glass of champagne.
Right.
It doesn't match the venue. And so when we invented that product line for the caterware line, we invented it with, got 7 or 11 colors certified, also being BPI certified for our caterware line.
Oh.
So it's industrial compostable. So wherever your organics go with the food at these venues, concerts, stadiums, weddings, our products follow your organics. And so it's very simple. It saves on the money when you get it hauled away because there's no tax. A lot of cities are not charging taxes on recyclable or compostable products outside of landfill. So it's kind of neat to enter into those arenas with a superior product.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really neat then. I didn't even know it went so deep into the different venues, but then also like different colors need to be okayed.
If you want to have a child's birthday party, you know, prior to us really getting involved with the sustainability in this venue. If you want a fun, sexy color, you could be offered white, off-white, or bone color. You know, like not a lot of options.
Eggshell white.
Yeah. So not a lot of options. Okay. So you know, when you have a party or a venue or you want to celebrate, like we just got off the 4th of July weekend, you can do a red, white, and blue. And it matches the theme instead of playing like, oh, look, it's an off color white, but this must be sustainable. So it's fun to have yellows and greens and blues and that kind of stuff to match any venue.
Yeah. So then what got you interested in, did you reach out to greenhouses or did they kind of reach out to you? How did that work?
It was a little of both.
Okay.
We were working closely with a couple greenhouses here locally and saying, all right, so we think another advantage for this material doesn't last forever is garden pots. And what are your thoughts on that? And they said, well, we've tried coconut hair and we've tried, you know, fiber pots and, you know, they all, we feel good about them, you know, leaving a less of a carbon footprint behind, but at the end of the day, they didn't really work in the production side. They're too soft, too brittle, or they would collect, you know, black mold or green mold on some of those things.
Right.
And so it never really was a good fit for a large grower. Maybe some of the boutique growers out there, people were accepting of that technology. So we really asked, you know, where did those other products fall short?
Okay.
And the comments we got were, they collected mold, they broke down too fast or they didn't break down fast enough. You know, kind of like one or the other.
Yeah.
And the other thing was this, there wasn't enough root to soil contact once planted in the ground. And so one of the things I was thinking about, because the martillo breaks down, but it doesn't break down as fast, like in one growing season. It takes a couple of growing seasons to break down.
Okay.
But what we've done is we went out for a patent to actually have it where you peel the tabs away from the pot. So what happens is if you have a garden pot here.
Oh, thank God you have a visual.
Yeah. Cool. And so we have four tabs around this. What you do is you peel each tab. So when you peel each tab off, if you peel this tab off here, off of the pot, now you look at what happens, how much open space you have on the bottom of the pot now. So okay. Now, as soon as you plant this entire pot and the tab into the ground, you immediately have root to soil contact.
Yes.
And there's no stress to the roots. Usually when you pull them out from the petroleum pot, they're all root wrap and root bound. And some of the roots grow through the holes and you're ripping them out. And then everybody grabs and squeezes the roots, you know, and puts them in there. And the plant's just like screaming, like, stop. Yeah. So our pot actually has lowered some of the stress on the roots while planting in the ground. And one of the things with just the raw material that we're using, like the corn-based material, it breaks down really well in industrial compost facilities. But in the ground, it takes longer. So we've added nutrients into that. We've compounded nutrients into that formula, help it break down faster in the ground. So if you don't want, if you don't feel comfortable with it planting it in the ground, you can take it into an industrial compost facility. In Minneapolis and St. Paul, they have curbside pickup. So that can go right in your curbside pickup for industrial composting.
Okay.
And that will then break down into compost between 30 and 90 days and then get brought back to the farmlands to create more plants. So it's a really like a nice... a circular economy for that. And if you do, like for us, since there's nutrients in there, what's cool part is if you do plant your any plant in the ground, you usually add, you know, granular fertilizer or liquid fertilizer. And there's times that granular fertilizer, wind and rain, will wash it off into the waterways. Well, when this is breaking down in the ground, it's releasing nutrients right to the ball of the roots, where the roots are.
Right.
So we've actually seen with the test through Iowa State, we've seen, you know, faster growth and more growth, like more fruits on more volume of like tomatoes, eggplants, red pepper plants, stuff like that. So really kind of fun that we're preventing some of the stuff to be, you know, washed off in the waterways. So we have cleaner waterways, but that way you're not wasting the nutrients by just, have, you know, off anywhere where else you want to go.
Yeah. Wow. I have so many questions now. So is there a study that you've actually like conducted that has like the difference between a regular container or like just planting it bare root versus in the container? Like,
yeah. So we have done our own trials. Iowa State's trial with us, Proven Winners has done their own studies.
Okay.
Like the greenhouses themselves haven't seen a giant increase or any difference between petroleum to our pot, the Eco Grande Plus or the Self Eco pot. But once the plant's in the pot longer, there then also there's a chance for more nutrients to get out and start affecting the plant more. We have some time lapse videos on our website, you know, it shows difference at 2 and 4 weeks at selfecogarden.com to see some growth, time lapse video.
Yeah,
but the true test is like when we've had horticulture companies literally plant our pots with the plants in the ground next to a petroleum pot that they've taken out. And they've seen a noticeable difference from when they don't add fertilizer to either one.
Okay. Yep.
How much more that ours are still continuing to grow and stay healthy. Because one of the things the grower has issue with is when it leaves their property, they can't control what happens anymore.
Yes.
And so if somebody doesn't add nutrients or fertilizer, if somebody doesn't water, if somebody plants it in a bad soil, so that they feel like this just gives them a little bit of a chance that there's a slow release of nutrients. There's less root stress when planting. It just gives them just a little bigger chip in a chair. So they have a chance to have success in their plant growing.
Yeah. And then let's like dive into how this is made or what is the ingredients to make this container. Right.
So it's bizarre that we can almost say it's all made from byproducts.
Okay.
So the base material, it's a corn-based material, plant-based material from PLA. And so PLA is made, most stuff's in the Midwest in the United States, but it's not the kernel of the corn they're taking. They're taking the roots and the stalks. So we're not taking a food stock away from, you know, animals or humans.
Yeah.
So the roots and the stalks are then brought down to the original sugars of their makeup. And then from there, they build up a polymer, which is a plant-based plastic pellet. It's always bizarre saying plant-based plastic because plastic is just how it's identified as what it is, but it's just not petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we've added other byproducts to get the nutrients into this. And so it's a bunch of agriculture byproducts. So it could be we've experimented with manure, with eggshells, we've experimented with crustaceans, we've experimented with distillers grains and soy flour. We've experimented with all of these, and we have a nice blend of a variety of these byproducts of agricultural byproducts that have already been through harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the leftovers of what they can't sell, they Got can't it. Use. So like kind of, for instance, if you do make whiskey, you get distillers grains, DDGs, from making whiskey.
Okay.
So that'd be a way of getting a byproduct that they really don't know what to do with it. They give it to a pig for a pig farm,
mm-hmm.
but they don't really have a great outlet for that.
Yeah. Wow.
So we don't share the full ingredients, but I'll mm-hmm. say too, it's not just MPKs we're striving for. We're not trying to make it a fertilizer. Fertilizer is not what we're striving for. We're saying nutrients. So there's a lot of proteins and amino acids in this that are natural for the plant. So it doesn't run too hot where you could have a, you know, have a situation. Oh, fell in the back.
Whoa, that was random.
Yeah. I'm being haunted here.
Oh no.
But that way something it doesn't run too hot to burn any roots or any plants. It's just a really all natural, nice amino acids and proteins.
Yeah. And then so how does this technically degrade then or compost in the ground?
Yeah. So these are great questions, because these are the ones I answer every day. The material itself, being in room temperature, being not exposed to light, moisture, mm-hmm. humidity, you know, heat, shelf life could be, you know, years on these things. And so, but once you expose it to heat and moisture,
mm-hmm.
are the two biggest things that actually are the catalyst to affect the material to start to degrade.
Okay.
And so that's what we say. I love that right away. You said with compostable garden pots. So we don't use the word biodegradable, because biodegradable is such a specific definition of that. So we say these are compostable or industrial compostable with like an asterisk, because these will compost mm-hmm. in the ground, but there's not enough heat or moisture to activate it within one growing season.
Yep. Okay. You
know, people that do it in Hawaii, they'll see faster breakdown than maybe some in Arizona. So that's why we say plant it, and then whatever's left at the growing season, just till it up to make smaller pieces to help it break down more. Because if you think about in the ground.
Yeah, I would love to see what this looks like in the ground.
So you have your soil and your plant in here.
Mm-hmm.
You peel the tabs, and then the soil is wrapped around the pot.
Yeah.
So there's nothing really there to make the shape of the pot change.
Right.
You know, so you have the roots that break out and grow, but they're not really breaking more through the pot. They're just finding more soil and mm-hmm. expanding from there. And so at the end of the year, you say nothing's changed. The pot's still intact and
mm-hmm.
what's going on. But when we weigh it, it weighs less on the gram level, because it is breaking down and deteriorating. So then after you see more time, more and more breaks down. And there's a nice blend where as it slowly starts to break down with heat and moisture, as that starts to release, it breaks down to smaller and smaller plastics.
Mm-hmm.
So I say smaller plastics, smaller components,
mm-hmm.
where we talk about microplastics, and microplastics from petroleum really never go away, and they end up in the fish and the birds that we eat, and then mm-hmm. we digest it.
Yep.
Well, these break down to small enough plant-based plastics where now microbes can consume those and go back into the soil.
Yes.
So it really does not leave anything behind that could, you know, be dangerous or you know, affect our health from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking about how like fungi could be involved with this too. Like, is there a specific strain or fungus that kind of latches onto this to help decompose? Or
there is so much more that we could do that we are doing
mm-hmm.
On the research of additives, ingredients, and formulations, percentages. The hard part is, you know, we spent a lot of money and several months to get it certified to be ASTMD 6400 compliant for industrial compostable.
Mm-hmm.
And so just trying to get to that point is, if you change any formulation, you have to get it recertified and retested. And so these pots got tested for heavy metals,
mm-hmm.
for fluorines, they do ecotoxicity tests. So we want to make sure that that's not affecting anything that's growing. So even when the tests with heavy metals and these other things, they actually degrade it down and put it in with other plants and make sure the plants do grow in the compost that it makes.
Mm-hmm.
And so to go and change too many variables in this and keep going for more certification or more validation doesn't make sense. We're very cautious and just changing the formula, but we are working on some other formulations behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's really neat. Huh. Okay. Yeah, and then what would you do? You do like other recycling stuff, so like other containers that you manufacture. How can people recycle if they don't have like these compostable?
Right. So great question. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to avoid the landfills. And so we can't, there's no silver bullet yet. And so we don't have a perfect solution, but we think it's a better solution down the road. There's a lot of data and stats out there that only between 2 and 5% of plastic pots get recycled. And so, being petroleum pots, really the only ones that can't get recycled are like 1, 3s, and 5s are the ones that are most prevalent. But ones you see are 4s and 6s. That can't be. And in Minneapolis, they passed ordinance this last year. No black petroleum products. So if you have a black pot or a black tray, they won't recycle it.
Oh,
So
yeah,
one
that's a
of the
lot of
reasons that is
gardening.
the conveyor belts on these big facilities, the conveyor belt's black. And so when they have the eye up there sorting, it can't pick up the black plastic. So there's a lot of misunderstanding of what gets recycled, and we all put things in our recycle bins that is called wish cycle. We wish we could recycle
Wish cycling, I like
it. And then from
that.
there, what happens? We pay to pay for the gas to bring it to somewhere to sort it, and then it doesn't fit in that facility. And then we pay another truck to bring it to the landfill.
Okay,
So
yeah.
our two things are is A, we would love if you plant it in the ground or the pot and just let it be there and just keep breaking it down till it turns into, an earthly product. Always we if you don't like to do that, then you can industrial compost it. And unfortunately, that industrial composting isn't everywhere. And hopefully that we pick up the intelligence and the speed of offering industrial composting in all the communities, not just a select few. Hopefully they realize this is one of the tools in the toolbox of getting rid of products that we don't need. And it adds a really good value of bringing compost back to farmlands, back to people that can use it in their yard or for construction, stuff like that. And so third one would be to put into landfill. And so you can't recycle these plastics. There's not a large enough stream of it to recycle it at this point. Hopefully someday there is enough where they could say this number is now recyclable, but right now it goes in a landfill. And I'll tell people that it's still a better fit in the landfill than petroleum. So petroleum will break down, let's say in 1,000 years. This might take 200 years in the landfill to break down. So it's still an 800-year better decision. If you have the and ultimately, we didn't drill for petroleum. We didn't bring it over from overseas. We didn't process it. So I still think, again, not a silver bullet, but boy, it's a pretty shiny bullet of a nice solution for today.
Okay, so where do the recycling go where people have it, like near their apartments or like houses, like those big dumpster containers? Like, where do those recyclings go? Is that the industrial or?
Those go to a recycling center. So ones that are made from petroleum, those go to a recycling center. Those are made from plant-based that are ASTM D6400 or BPI certified. Those then go to industrial compost facility, which takes yard waste, food scraps, all organics. And then those can then they get brought in windrows. They're shredded up, and then they bring those windrows up to like 160 degrees Fahrenheit temperature for like 6 days. They activate it with the heat and the moisture, and they pump oxygen in there to elevate the temperatures. And that's what really activates and breaks down these materials.
And so if people have the containers by their house that say like compostable, is that where it's actually going? Or
Yes. Yep. So if they have, so typically those would be a green bin, as you know. We have a black bin for our, and this is, I'm in a suburb of St. Paul in Minnesota. So a black bin is landfill, blue is recycling, and we don't have composting available in our neighborhood, but usually those would be green or a yellow would be compostable. But you have to make sure in each city and each ordinance is different of what they take. So you really need to make sure you check out your local admin to see where it's acceptable. Because my frustration is some of these cities are banning plastic straws, plastic bags, and these things, but they don't offer a solution to use something else.
What
So
are we
you're
supposed
forced
to
to use
bring
a
it?
product that you have to then have to put in the landfill anyways. So if you're really going to go and legislate this accordingly, make sure you also legislate that there's an option to have composting and or recycling, stuff like that.
Yeah, because now it's on us to use our gas or transportation to actually go to
Yes.
these places too, and nobody wants to really do that or figure out where to go. So it's like a weird obstacle where it's like, do I want to compost or do I just save on
Correct.
that? And
There's so many ways that we have to relook how we currently do something. So right now we have our landfill picked up every week and our recyclings every 2 weeks. If we miss a landfill day and during the week, it's okay. We don't have enough. We have enough, enough capacity for 2 weeks. But if we miss our recycling, you drop to your knees like no, because it's already overflowing. And so now
Yes.
imagine if you rethought how we've done this. What if your landfill got picked up every 2 or 3 weeks, and your compost and or recyclables picked up every week? So if something smells bad, typically it's going to be organic, unless it's like dirt, like smelly shoes. But anything that smells bad is probably going to be something that you've eaten or can be consumed or an organic base. So that can go into compost. And then you have your recycle bin, which we're already recycling. So what doesn't smell bad and what can't be recycled is going to be in your landfill bin. But if you look at everything you put in your landfill bin, take it out and you separate between recycling and compost, pretty soon you only have just a little bit of landfill. So all of a sudden, and if it doesn't smell bad and it's just kind of natural, if it's cloth and some of these things or plastic that can't be recycled, well, that can sit longer in your landfill trash can because it's not smelling bad. The flies aren't being collected to it. So if you had your organics picked up every week instead of your landfill's picked up once every 2 or 3 weeks or once every 4 weeks, and you got charged accordingly based on how much you put in there,
Oh,
you
yeah.
should be rewarded for making the better decision of
Rewards
buying and
program.
consuming organics or recyclables instead of being rewarded for the landfill and get that picked up every, like, why would you reward somebody to throw something away every week when you could have something different, different choice? And I think it's interesting when we start labeling these products. They hold us to a different accountability, a different expectation for labeling something that says industrial compostable. Make sure the label is logo can be seen from how many feet away, and all these things accordingly. But why don't we make landfill products be labeled differently? Why are we? Why do we have to make such a scene over make sure that we can identify if this is compostable? What if everything was assumed to be compostable, but things that weren't had to be labeled accordingly, and then put the burden on those people that are making something for 1,200 years be labeled to be landfill? So it's bizarre how, as we're trying to make subtle changes to how we act, and we're bringing a greener product, a more safe product, a more earth-friendly product, we have more rules to adhere by than somebody that can drill from Mother Earth, ship it here, produce something, put in the landfill. There's no questions asked.
Is it just because it's cheaper and what we were used to, or?
Correct. It's totally just like status quo. It is cheaper, but is it cheaper to keep building new landfills
Oh
because we're
my
at
God.
capacity, or is it cheaper to offer curbside pickup for composting that can go back to farmlands and bring nutrients back to America, to the American soil?
Oof.
So we just have to think about, because really these are simple solutions that help offset whatever we've done to the planet. So I'm not saying here that this is going to bring icebergs back to, to polar bears and stuff. But when I look at the situation of, if you want to talk about climate change or global warming, whatever definition you want to take, we have a lot of plastic in the ocean. And so we have to take responsibility for that. I'm not going to bring up, flatulence of cows and bring up earthquakes and volcanoes that put CO2 in the air. We can't control that, but we can control plastics and how we use them. And if we can use less of them and they end up less in the water and less microplastics. So we're offering a nice solution to use something that's not petroleum based and gives you two options to avoid the landfill. So at the end of the day, I can't control where it goes. I hope that you put it in the ground. If you don't do that, I hope you compost it. But again, at least I feel good at night that we've offered two solutions for you to avoid the landfills.
So is there different sizes for these pots? So if somebody plants something, then wouldn't they want it to grow more? But the pot that you showed is like what, the 4.5
Yep, this is
inch
the
or
four inch.
something?
This is the Eco Plus Grande. So this is starts here, but nothing really prevents it. I mean, you're not going to plant if you plant a tomato or a perennial in there, the roots get out from the side. Yeah. And so they will completely and grow outside of this. So it doesn't restrict the growth at all, because roots can get out.
Okay.
So, and we are working with different sizes too, mm-hmm. for a future release. So we're not limited on the size of these garden pots. Okay. We are today, because we have one to the market, but we have a 2-inch square, 3-inch round, 4-inch round, and then the 4-inch Eco Plus Grande.
Okay.
So,
wow. Yeah. And I like how deep it goes too, because then it's way better for like the depth of the
roots. It is nice when you put that into the ground that everything is intact, and instantly you get the soil root contact,
mm-hmm.
and it just like the plant's like, okay, I found my home now,
mm-hmm.
and then as it breaks down, it brings in the microbes, just activates the soil, and it works out really well.
Yeah. And can you explain the numbers, if people don't know, like the recycling numbers, what is that all?
Yes. So the main ones that you see are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Okay.
7 is other. So if it's not like a polypropylene, high density polyethylene, low density polyethylene, polystyrene, if it's none of those, then it gets marked as a 7, and that goes to landfills.
What is an example of a 7?
A 7 would be an ABS. Or our garden pot's a 7. So because it's other than the traditional petroleum.
Okay.
But that's why we have to say on here, ASTMD 6400. Wow. So that way 7 means other. It's nothing that can be recycled, but this can be industrial composted.
Okay.
So those are what you know, where it is. And the, some communities, they will take 1, 3s, and 5s. Some mm-hmm. will take 1, 2s, and 5s. Typically very rare to see number 4s and number 6s taken into recycling.
Okay.
Either the stream's not that large for it, or those plastics like number 4 and number 6, those plastics could potentially break down too much where it doesn't get back to the molecular chemistry it needs to make those plastics again. And so one of the things when we talk about plastic recycling is that people think that plastic can be recycled unlimited.
Mm.
And that's not true. You really can recycle plastics about 3 to 4 times before it loses the properties to be that same plastic. And so papers, glass, and metals can all be recycled unlimited from there. Metals and glass can be recycled unlimited, but papers and plastics, they have a life cycle of them. So, you know, we don't keep track. We're not recycling as much plastic as we should, but we're not keeping track of how many times that bottle has been recycled.
Mm.
So when you go say, we're going to use recycled plastic, or site pass has already been post-consumer recycled.
Yep.
Well, is that the second time it's been recycled? The third time? The fourth time? So you might get some people that are skeptical about producing a product if you need certain integrity of petroleum to make something that is from recycled plastic, that it might be on its third or fourth or fifth time being recycled.
Mm.
And so I'm not here to tell people don't do it, but just like, it's still a better use. Anytime you can upcycle or reuse redirect something from the landfill.
Yeah.
It's better.
Yeah. So, it's kind of like procrastination, but a better way.
Yes. I mean, anytime you can repurpose anything,
it's
just better than just like to put it into the landfill.
Hmm. And so what would be the process of like getting, you were saying you have license for the D6, like all of those numbers, letters,
ASTMD 6400.
What is the process of kind of getting that
to be compliant, to be certified? So you have to take your actual product,
mm-hmm.
with actual material. So this is where it gets expensive. You need to go ahead and make either a prototype tool or a production tool. You need to injection mold or thermoform or produce that product. And then you have to submit it to a third party testing site that will take it. And they have different chambers and different technology to accelerate the breaking down of those products.
Mm.
And they monitor it every week to every day. They monitor it with pictures and temperatures and make sure that it's in that environment, that there's enough moisture and heat to break it down. Okay. And then there's benchmarks based on what ASTM what ASTM sort of, you know, what they declare, And these products have to be broken down enough at these time frames.
Okay.
And then they have to be then we went to the next step and test them for ecotoxicity and test them for heavy metals and test them for fluorines. So that way we know, like, hey, this is a safe product and we can be proud to have our name on it and stand behind it.
Mm-hmm. So then how long does it usually take to decompose these pots?
So, well, in an industrial compost facility, 30 to 90 days.
Okay.
So then, 30 to 90 days is what they usually take for the process. And based on, you know, how the industrial compost facility, how hot their windrows are and what all their organics and carbons they put in with that. But in the ground then, you know, again, how moist and how hot your soil is, it could be, you know, a couple of years.
Okay.
Based on that, if you have backyard composting, you know, ours aren't certified for backyard composting, but even putting your backyard compost would help accelerate breakdown because it is warmer and there's more organics in there to help it break down. So it wouldn't hurt to put it in your backyard compost, but we can't say it breaks down in 2 months in that environment because there's everybody composts differently in their backyard.
Okay. Do you have a fun, like, recycling fact, like a banana can be decomposed in like whatever years or
a fun recycling here's a fun fact.
Cool.
So we've been aggressively farming our soil for over 150 years and we've taken about half the nutrients out of our topsoil.
Okay.
So that's why our farmers need to add more fertilizers and nutrients into that. If you were to add a quarter inch of compost to that soil, a quarter inch equals 30 years of nutrients.
Oof. So like it takes to make that.
So I mean, so if you took this pot and broke it down into your industrial compost facility and you created a bunch of dirt or a bunch of compost and brought that back to the farmers and you put a layer of a quarter inch down there, that would bring back 30 years of nutrients to that soil.
Whoa.
So imagine if you did that 5 years in a row, you would have brought back the 150 years worth of nutrients that we took away.
That's delightful.
So pretty kind of neat to know that these are simple solutions. And the problem with that, the unfortunate part for me is we're only composting 3 to 7% of our food waste.
Mm-hmm.
So our food waste, instead of putting in the landfill and have it sitting in the landfill for hundreds of years, we can literally put in this bin with these garden pots, with our champagne flutes, with our martini glasses, put that to the industrial compost facility, have a big party about it, bring it back to the farmers. So we subsidize some of the farmers with giving them fertilizers and these type of things, where what if we subsidize them with free compost or reduced compost? So there's a natural way of doing this. And if compost runs off in the waterways, it's inorganic, it's okay. Or it's earthly from there. If fertilizer runs off in the waterways, it stimulates the algae growth and all the other stuff. And then you have a water issue.
Yeah.
So there's simple solutions by simple acts that we can do by just putting something into one container instead of a different container.
Yeah. And then it would, I guess, speed up the process if you separated them, because landfill plus compost doesn't equate sometimes. So
correct.
Okay.
You know, I know, like, parts of Israel that they're going back and mining their landfills, because Israel is not a very large country. So they don't have the ability to keep expanding landfills. So they're mining their landfills and grabbing organics out of there, or grabbing things that could be recycled or repurposed, you know, the aluminums and steels and plastics out of there. And that's a solution for us too here also. Let's go back to these landfills and take the organics out and the food waste out and the garden waste out and the plastics and stuff out, and then leave more room for stuff that can't be recycled or composted, instead of just saying, well, we're going to ship it further down. I read an article that New York City ships their things down as far as South Carolina to Michigan.
Whoa.
Can you imagine the gas cost of shipping your landfill across 3 to 4 state lines? We're not using common sense with everyday issues.
Yeah, I actually was just visiting my sister in New York, and I did see that they have different, like, setup of separating their different recycling. So that was interesting, and I don't think I've seen that in the U.S. as much. I guess in the Midwest, I feel like people either are really caring about it or people don't believe in it. So yeah. it's hard to.
I know in Europe it's very popular, you know, because again, they don't have as much land as we do here. Right. We have to take a little bit of energy and a little bit of effort to just make a better decision of using different receptacles, different mm-hmm. bins. Maybe spend a little time, rinse out the container when you use it so we can recycle it. Mm-hmm. These are small things we can do to really help a bigger issue. So if we all just rinse our containers, recycle them or compost them accordingly, mm-hmm. we'd be in a better situation. Mm-hmm. It all starts with, first of all, let's not buy something that can't be recycled or composted.
Right.
You know, let's just think up front about what has too much packaging. You know, I don't want to put Barbie on the spot, but you buy a Barbie doll. Oh, I have three girls. I have one boy and three girls. And you buy my Barbie doll. I just feel horrible for how much is left behind when you finally bring out the Barbie doll to give mm-hmm. to your daughter yep. or your child. And all of a sudden, here, there's all this, it's all landfill. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
You know, I feel bad when we buy some of these toys for our children and we end up filling up the landfill more than we fill their hearts up.
Yeah, I agree. But with the healthcare side of things, everything's yeah. with plastic because everything has to be sterile. So it's
agreed.
That was just ungodly amount of plastic.
And I've been on the record so many times saying I don't oppose drilling for oil for petroleum products, mm-hmm. but I take issue with using drilling for oil on single use plastics when mm-hmm. there's an alternative such as compostable.
Yeah.
And so I'd rather see the drilling we're doing for petroleum products for aerospace technology, medical devices. Mm-hmm. Plastic has been an amazing technology for us okay. to put people up on the moon, to mm-hmm. for us to extend people's lives with healthcare and medical devices. So I'm not here to oppose it, but let's be smarter in how we use it.
Mm-hmm. So, I agree. Yeah. And so what do you think the future would look like for like the gardening centers? Do you think that we can get to mostly compostable pots, or is that hard to ask for? Because every day I look at our recycling area and I'm part of the sustainability group at Sargent's as well. And I've been taking on the project of where we can recycle these. So that's also why I really wanted to have you on too, is like, how can I help? Where can we bring these? Because I'm having trouble where no drivers want to come and pick these items up.
Yeah. You know, being a little more in rural areas, you have a little different challenge. Mm-hmm. The more people use these products, there becomes a revenue stream for people to deal with them.
Mm.
You know, the reason people come and pick up your landfill, because they make money on doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So if more people compost and more people use these products, it would help people to make money, because people have to make money to pull these things, you know, to come and pick it up and pay somebody. Yeah. So we can't expect somebody to lose money to pick up landfill or pick up recycling and stuff. So, mm-hmm. But more people use that and we're wiser with it. Imagine if every garden pot was converted to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the growing season, I know a lot of growers say about 20% of products don't sell, either they don't grow or don't sell. Now you're paying somebody in high school to separate
yep.
plant versus petroleum.
Mm.
Well, now with these, you can take the whole thing and put it into the industrial compost site. Okay. And then the whole thing, pot and plant, which the composter would love to have the organics and the nutrients of all that from the plants and the pot. That's a nice blend. Mm-hmm. So also now everything that didn't sell, you could put all into one giant bin.
Wow.
And have that hauled to industrial composter. So they would accept that. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do any sorting. It saves you guys time, money from doing the sorting.
Yep.
So there's actually ways of being more efficient with these mm-hmm. Landfill free products. It's just a matter of just, you have to rethink how you purpose your time and efforts.
Yeah. So how would you recommend me or somebody contacting these recycling places to find out where we can take them based on the different numbers that we've separated them in?
Yeah. So there's gotta be a website out there, especially for Minnesota specific,
mm-hmm.
Just Google, you know, Google is your friend. Google recycle centers. I think they call me municipal recycling, the acronym of MRFs. And so you look up MRFs for municipal utility recycling centers or facilities. There'll be listings of what they take. And if you say, hey, we're a growing center and we have these types of plastics that we collect and we have these type of other things that we compost, they'll put you direct to that.
Oh, okay.
At that same time too.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. And so what does a typical day look like for you, Danny?
Well, for me, so being that I am the president of a manufacturing facility, mm-hmm. you know, a day for me is I really need to rely on my team of the finance team, of the operations team, and the sales marketing team to do what they do best. We use a book called Traction from Gina Wickman. It's our way of delegating and elevating what mm-hmm. we can do. But I'm right now, you know, in the thick of things, developing new products for the garden side, new products. We've sampling different materials. What we're doing, how we're applying these labels, a plant-based label on this plant-based pot, we're one of the only ones in the world doing this. I mean, this technology, I'm so pleased that we have a unique product, but I'm so pleased that we actually have pushed the envelope of manufacturing. Mm-hmm. That we're doing things with automation and plant-based plastics that nobody in the world has done before.
Yeah,
so it's for me being a third generation manufacturer and the awesome things that my grandparents and my parents have done, mm-hmm. I feel like I've kind of exceeded my own expectations of such a great base and background that I'm looking at through a different lens for a better future for my own kids and mm-hmm. your kids and everyone else's, you know, generations to come after us.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And so we kind of talked about the biggest obstacle that you're facing, kind of just maybe lack of education or the whole kind of system in all. Is that what you would agree, or what's your?
I think it's lack of education. I think it's lack of personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still see, you know, people at the stop sign on the way to work taking a left turn and they throw the cigarette out the window.
Yep.
You know, and I'm just like, wow, this is 2022 and you threw a cigarette butt out on the road. Like, I thought we're well beyond that.
No,
and
so it's so sad.
It's unfortunate. And I'm not saying we have to be tree huggers. I'm not a tree hugger myself. I try to make good decisions and you can make good decisions without completely sacrificing your time on this planet. We're not out here very long, but boy, we sure are disruptive for mm-hmm. not being here very long.
Yeah.
And so I wish it didn't take legislation and big government to mandate these. I wish we would want ourselves. We work here on in a Stillwater, Minnesota, and that's a river city.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm personally surprised that they don't have an easier way to compost or recycle of this in the cities, so these things avoid going into the river. Mm-hmm. You know, I would think that the coasts are more proactive. I'm surprised the Midwest that we're not more proactive, saying this is just a better way of utilizing our sources and our resources.
Yeah, we have so much water.
Yeah, exactly. So when we have what's the stat that we of our, you know, we always say we have 10,000 lakes, but we're so humble in Minnesota, we have 14,000 lakes. We don't want to brag about it, but we have more water shoreline than all of California, well, you know, from there. So
yeah.
Interesting. I'm just surprised that we somehow we politicize this. Somehow it's been a red state, blue state topic instead mm-hmm. of a purple state topic. Like, hey, we need to unite on this. We have to really be wise about this. You know, some of my very first investors, they're conservative people, but man, they care about hunting and fishing and being on the water and not right. having plastic in the water. So it's not a political statement. It's it should be a people statement of us making a better decision for how we use our stuff.
Yeah. That was something I learned too with the first environmental like group was duck hunters. So that's like how we all got on board with just saving the planet, is because the duck hunters wanted more room for ducks. So it's just,
yeah. If the water is so polluted, the ducks don't even fly over that area anymore. Mm-hmm. That's done.
Yeah.
If pheasants, if they can't procreate and have enough soil and land and stuff to do that in North, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, they just don't do that. So these people, I mean, the men and women are really impassioned about saving the environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the hard part is when you start bringing up such giant topics, all the things, and then they get that starts to become politicized. But these are simple tasks that we can do with simple products. So you might have to pay a little more for your plant, But if you're seeing better growth and better harvest from your plant, is it worth the 5, 10, 15 cents more to buy that when we got double eggplants and triple red pepper plants?
Yes.
Like I know whether a dollar a piece for a red pepper. So if you go from 3 to 8 of red peppers on a plant, like, man, Simon, yeah, that's a $5 savings. So I paid 25 cents more for the plant. I just saved a bunch on four extra red peppers. So
yeah, no, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Again, one of the things, like being a business in the Twin Cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis has a tax or a fee to bring your landfill away. So you pay your bill and it's a 70% tax. So if the bill was $100, you're actually paying $170 because there's a 70% tax on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you're paying more to have stuff brought to a landfill. If your recycling has zero tax and your organics have zero tax. So it doesn't make more sense to put more product and volume into your recycling and land and your compost. Yeah. So if you can get a smaller landfill bin, and then that cost goes down, the tax is less compared to putting more in there and not composting.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can put so much in your compost, you can offset with the taxes on your landfill where you're actually reducing your overhead all cost. But we just don't think about it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Hmm. And then, so what are you most excited for in the future?
I like our partnerships. I like our products. I like that we had a slow start because, again, we're trailblazers. I mean, this product is there's no path for us to go. I mean, we have machetes in front of us and we're hacking down our pathway. There's no footsteps in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fun to be down this path and I and my team know what our next steps are. And we know people are going to try to catch us and they'll, you know, eventually we'll get close, but we know what the next step is, what the next product is, you know, what the next certification is. It's fun to be on that, the very front edge. And we're on the cutting edge of technology, not quite the bleeding edge. We're kind of bleeding edge a couple of years ago, but we're now more on the cutting edge because our team is responded so well from our automation team and our engineering team and our operations staff and our partners with Proven Winners. It's just been so great to be in the trenches with their partners developing products for tomorrow. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So explain your partnership with Proven Winners. How did that become a thing?
Yeah. You know, this is probably going on the year 4 now.
Okay.
We started off with some local growers here. Wagner's was a great resource for us to use. They have two sites, you know, one in Minneapolis, one in Hugo. And they're the ones when I first, every time I develop a new formulation, I'd run over and say, hey, can you guys try this? Can you guys try this? Can you try this? So they've been a great partner. They've been having landfill free garden experiences for, this is their third year now.
Oh.
So you can go there and all the plants that you're buying them in that 3 and 4 inch size is there. So that's been great to work with them on that. More people start seeing these. We did a Kickstarter campaign in 2014 and we shipped like 22 countries from people. We got funded. We raised $25,000 in 24 hours to kind of come up with a new mold and design. So it was, I mean, just everything's been a whirlwind. So then finally our paths can, you know, cross with Proven Winners and they'd have our prod and some people had bought the stuff from their company, you know, online and sampled the stuff. And they really want to make a statement too of being an industry leader and saying, no, let's take a good look at this. But again, it has to meet the requirements of, has to work for the corporate grower. Mm-hmm. It has to work on the retail shelf and make sure it looks nice at retail. And it has to work for the gardener. So if it doesn't work for any of those, then it's dead and arrival. And I will say that we definitely have made a choice, a material choice to work for the corporate growers and then retail more than the gardener, because we have materials that break down faster. What happened is too brittle for the corporate growers, or it breaks down too fast and fades and cracks at the retail shelf. And so, and we have proof that people didn't want to buy a pot that was discolored and cracked, even though the plant was bigger and everything else. They're still like, no, I want the shiny white pot that I can throw in the landfill instead of the bigger plant with the pot that can plant in the ground. So it hurt my head to go through that experiment, but it is what it is. So now the closest silver bullet is it has to work for the corporate growers, has to go to the retail shelf, and it has to be able to be plantable in the ground. And as we develop more products and then more people embrace this technology, embrace this way of thinking of, you know, currently right now, people plant their garden in front of them, and then they love the look of it. Then they look behind them and they see all the trays and pots and stuff, and then they get like a heavy heart.
Yep.
And so it'd be nice to be able to look in front of you and look behind you with nothing there left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, and that's what we'll get to. Point. But people have to think about that, and they have to choose, like, no, I wanna have a landfill free gardening experience. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to plant the pots in the ground, or I want to build industrial compost them to create more soil and nutrients for the growers down the road.
Yeah, no, that's a good outlook. And with your trends with sustainability, who created the idea of putting the QR code on there? Because that's actually how I learned where to go. Like on the pot, I think it says, find out more. And so I scanned it and I was like, oh, wow, that's a whole thing.
So that would be the marketing team of Proven Winners. That would be Marshall Dirks. Mm-hmm. Marshall and his team do an amazing job of trying to manage expectations with this, because people have been greenwashed before and they've heard of these things, and these are all bio-based or partially, you know, we've had people try to do partially petroleum and partially plant-based. So they say it's using those petroleum, but now there's no outlet for it. You can't recycle them. You can't compost them. You can't plant them in the ground. So it actually is a disservice to make something that's just that. So we want to make sure we check all the boxes that pertain to us. We didn't want to say, let's use less petroleum, check a box. Let's just not use petroleum and check that box. Instead of using less, let's just not use it.
Yep.
Let's make sure it's sort of, let's say it meets the certification of ASTM D 6400 that is compliant with all those, you know, boxes. So check that box. Let's make sure, I mean, we went ahead and they got the USDA certified bio-based product on here. So, you know, that's been, you know, USDA from there. So we want to make sure these boxes were relevant.
Yeah.
So it took longer, but we want to make sure when somebody had a question, like a yeah, but, because I, since 2014, when I started Self-Eco, I've answered so many yeah, but questions. And it's like, yeah, but how about automated growing? Yeah, but what about packaging? Yeah, but what about nutrients? Yeah, but what about the time to break down? Yeah, but what about shipping? It's like, oh, so I have videos and recordings and documentations and trials of all these things. Because I knew I had to answer every question.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I got to Proven Winners, I had answered about every question. So when they brought that up too, I'm like, oh, I already have a chapter on that.
Oh,
I already
have a chapter
on that. So I think they felt really comfortable with where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
That if they would have caught me 3 years earlier, we're probably still too green, no pun intended, of having enough data how we got to where we got to.
Mm.
So I think it was really good timing and really good synergies for us to, you know, kind of carve out that relationship at that time.
Yeah. Wow. That's lovely. What else? I feel like one of my favorite questions is, if you had unlimited resources, what research would you look into? It might be pertaining to this, but it does not have to be.
Well, fantastic question. I have two answers.
Oh, perfect.
One would be to completely be off the grid for the entire facility. So geothermal, wind, solar, everything would be fantastic to literally produce a product that was a circular economy product that used zero resources outside of what the heavens gave us.
Yeah.
So I would love that. But also I think the billion-dollar idea is a device that can search out microplastics in your body or in your food. I think microplastics are going to be a big statement coming up here in the future. And I think it'd be interesting to find a way of detecting that before you know, in your body, in the food you eat, you know, because I would, again, even find a way to clean the waters of the microplastics would be a great invention too.
Yeah. So. Wow, that'd be so alarming. Anything you like scan and it's just everything has it in there.
Yeah, because I mean, there's some studies out there that we eat close to a credit card worth of plastic a month.
Oof.
You know, so I don't think we're realizing how many microplastics there are out there, and we're just kind of living amongst them.
Yeah, it's a new problem that we were just discovering now. Wow.
Yes, correct.
Interesting.
Yes.
And then I have two questions that I ask everybody. So how can flora as a whole influence the future? We've covered a lot of these.
Yeah, we have. You know, I think that first of all, flora is so important.
Mm-hmm.
to be planted and people, I mean, it brings you happiness in many different ways, from oxygen level, from just seeing something green in the wintertime in Minnesota. Yes. I think people, there's reason to have them at weddings and receptions and birthdays and stuff like that. So there's something emotional and happiness. I mean, we live in a day when our kids have never been more depressed or anxious filled with anxiety than today. And so to bring some greenery there and some fresh air, and, you know, there's a saying that when you plant a seed, it means you believe in the future. So why would you plant a seed if you're not going to, if nothing's going to grow?
That's a good point.
And so I think that by that part of that is you are believing in the future. And I think the flora just has to say, flora is a green product, but let's make sure everything around it is green and make the best decisions possible around that.
I agree. And then how can individuals as a whole kind of get more involved with flora and fungi or flora?
Yeah. You know, first of all, just buy products and share products. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody gets mad when somebody brings them flowers or brings them a plant. You know, nobody's like, oh, a plant. I hate plants. Mm-hmm. You know, so give somebody a plant. You know, there's times when, you know, in a way, when you plant a tree, it's usually shade for someone else. So when you give somebody a plant, it's for someone else to enjoy.
Yeah.
Well beyond just you giving it to them. So buy a plant. But again, when you make your decisions on where you buy your plants or who's growing the plants, how are they being taken care of? Make those decisions instead of saying, oh, I'm going to buy the cheapest one. Buy one that has a background and a backbone of making a difference for tomorrow with sustainable practices.
Yeah, I like that. Cool. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Danny, for being on the podcast. Do you have any other questions or comments that you wanted to chat about? We talked about a lot.
Yeah, no, KK, thank you. You asked great questions. It's fun just to give an overview and just an education, because we don't get exposed to this. Me being a third generation manufacturer, people are not exposed to manufacturing, you know, so I'm as rare as a family farm. Not that many people know farmlands anymore. So it's fun just to have a platform to share what we've done. And we're not trying to make any giant statements. We're just trying to bring really responsible products to market. And we just hope people say, well, this is a nice option and I'm going to embrace it. So thank you for the opportunity. Yeah. KK, you did a great job today.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I don't think I've ever really covered recycling or composting in this level. So this was great. And I look forward to doing the tour whenever the plant is up and running, because that would be great.
We have an opener policy. We love to share you know, the technology and automation of how we're making things in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, I guess let listeners know where they can find you or a way to contact you or any plugs or resources that you want to share.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, our manufacturing company is vistatech.com. Mm-hmm. Our catering is selfeco.com and garden is selfecogarden.com. But provenwinners.com is where you can find all the products to purchase with plants in them. So I recommend going there.
Perfect. All inclusive. Love that. All right. Thank you, Danny. And I will touch base with you soon to do that tour.
All right. Appreciate it. Cool. Be well.
Have a nice day.
Thanks.
Bye. Well, thank you again for tuning into this week's episode, episode 40. I am still editing and getting together some of my in-person interviews from Germany and Belgium, so I'll be posting those within a month or two. I have a couple of episodes lined up, so yeah, thank you for supporting the show, and again, visit my Patreon. I also have a Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, website. All of those links are below. If you cannot find me, email me at floraandfungapodcast@gmail.com. All right. Have a great week, my scientists, and go learn something new today. Peaches! Tired of feeling drained and lethargic? Wish you could boost your energy levels naturally and stay focused throughout the day with no crash? I've been struggling with this problem too. Thank you to Sovereignty's Purpose for the ultimate energy of the day. Imagine a world where you wake up feeling refreshed, alert, and ready to conquer any challenge that comes your way. With Sovereignty, you live your life with purpose. Whether you're tackling a project, powering through a workout, or simply need a pick-me-up during the day, purpose is carefully crafted with a powerful combination of amazing ingredients like green coffee bean extract, cordyceps, ashwagandha, bacopa, beet juice, hemp blend, green tea extract, cherry, blueberry, broccoli, kale, and turmeric extract. All of this is only 25 calories and 115 milligrams of caffeine with no jitters and no crashes. Harness this adaptogenic blend of benefits in your next smoothie, drink, cocktail, or dessert. Whether you're an entrepreneur, farmer, business professional, or student, purpose has got your back. No more sluggish afternoons and hello productivity that lasts. Grab your blend with 10% off using the code KK10 on sovereignty.co. That's SOVEREIGNTY.CO and use KK20 for 20% off at checkout.